We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
This is Evan Dawson. If you like conversations that take you beyond the headlines, join me on Connections. Every day, we dig into the issues shaping Rochester with the people living them, researching them, even trying to change them. No hot takes, no shouting most of the time. Just real conversations to keep you involved in your community. Listen to Connections wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I hope you are having a great day. I will tell you, I feel kind of bad about the way I started off last week's episode. Not the interview. I'm talking about the 5 minutes that I usually do like before an interview starts, because of course last week it was me basically sobbing and being like, oh, life is hard, my job is hard, and like I listened back to it and I'm like, suck it up, dude. Like, you know, what are you talking about? Life is hard. You've got the perfect life. Beautiful kids, beautiful business, like, and here I am going, but it's just been hard. And anyway, I apologize. I formally apologize to you for that. You didn't deserve that. But I do appreciate, a lot of you guys reached out to me and they were like, you're good. Life's good. You're good. Don't worry. Everyone has hard times. I know. Anyway, this is a really cool couple of episodes that you're about to hear. So pull back the curtain. It's not going to be a big secret. I'm going to talk about it right in the episode. But basically, the next two episodes, today and next Sunday, are episodes that were recorded essentially in unison. They were recorded back to back, right next to each other. In theory, this could have been a two-hour episode, but I decided to split it into two parts. The first part, what you're going to hear today, is one of the coolest starts to a podcast I've ever had. And again, I risk of repeating myself here, because you'll hear how it all plays out. But basically, you're about to hear Jen, the founder of Young Lion, for the first time taste beer, Young Lion beer, manufactured by Rohrbach. The backstory there is that Rohrbach recently purchased the brand Young Lion from Young Lion, maybe from K2. I'm not sure who owned it most recently. I'm not sure how the K2 thing is going down. I don't really know what's going on there. But long story short, that's the basic idea. But you're going to hear the actual moment that Jen cracks open and tries that first beer that Rohrbach won, and then gives her review. By the way, you're going to hear her give her review live to John in just like 3 minutes. Hang with me. You're going to hear it. It's coming up. Then, of course, I'll talk to Jen. We'll do an interview. Towards the end of that interview, John Erlob from Rohrbach comes back into the interview. And then John and Jen discuss how the deal went down, how those two came together for Young Lion to become acquired by Rohrbach. So some really good inside baseball in this episode. In next week's episode, John Erlob then and I do a one-on-one interview. And like I said, it's the curtain being pulled back. It was all recorded back-to-back. It is what it is. I will say, right after this interview, I went into Rohrbach and had dinner. And I had the sausage plate, like the German sampler, and it hits every time. I've had it before. It is so good. I got to try some loaded fries, and then my wife, we brought home buffalo chicken salad and some buffalo chicken pierogies. Just, oh, if you ever get a chance. For me, most of my experience with Rohrbach was always down Railroad Street, not on Buffalo Road so much. This is, of course, the Buffalo Road location I'm talking about in this episode and where I ate, and it's just... just really is a good, really, really good spot that I even when I got home, I told Ryan, I go, we got to go out there more often. So anyway, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy Jen Newman and a little bit of John Erlob.
Hey,
Okay, let me set the scene. This podcast with Jen's about to start, but real quick, I have to share with you guys what was about to happen, and then I was like, stop. I want to record this. I want to be recording. So I'm standing in John Erlob's office behind Rohrbach, the OG Rohrbach, and Jen Newman is here, and she's about to get interviewed. And there's four cans sitting right on a little, I don't know, coffee table. What do you call this thing? Side table, whatever. And Jen goes, are those the first ones? And I was like, oh, stop it. I need to record before you crack this open. So John is here. You're coming back in like an hour to get interviewed, right, John?
Yeah, yeah. Can't wait. Looking forward to it.
So this is the first run of the Young Lion on your equipment.
Yes, it is. We're very excited about it.
As a co-packer myself, this is a nervous moment. I know.
Yes, I'm nervous because the founder, I mean, Jen's right here. I got to look at her face and make sure she's happy.
Jen, how are you feeling?
I am so excited. I can't even tell you.
All right, I'm going to put the mic up for the crack here. Wow, the first can of Young Lion brewed at Rohrbach. Wait, look at it, like a good co-packer. He's leaving before you taste it, just in case. He's looking for glass. I know you are. I know. That's okay. It's all good. All right, Johnny. Thank you, buddy. You're going to come back. You're coming back for a whole hour in a little bit. So the end of this episode, he's coming back for, and we're going to talk about how this whole deal went down. Wow, look at her. She's sipping.
It's exciting. No, it's perfect. No, it's fantastic. The citrus is perfect. I got the mosaic in there. It's amazing. Amazing. Right. Love
you
it.
You nailed it, Johnny. Yay. I'll see you in a little bit. Wow, how about that? Friggin' legend. Like, I mean, a huge historic Rochester beer moment just happened. Yeah, you're good. Yeah. You're good. It's on. Yeah. A huge historic Rochester beer moment.
Huge.
Why am I here? Like, how did I deserve to be present for that?
Well, you're here. You're here because you were there for the entire journey, for most of it for me. So I have been an incredible friend and support through all of it.
Well, I think.
I think my first interview ever for Young Lion was with you.
I think so. Wham 1180 Food and Wine Show.
It was Phil. We just opened or we're about to open.
And you had, I want to get into that in a second because there's so much to talk about with you, but could I be selfish for a moment? I've been excited to tell you this for a couple of weeks. I don't even know if you're going to remember this, but there were a very small handful of people that I talked to prior to leaving radio and starting Craft Cannery. And you were one of those people. I remember exactly where I was. I was driving, and I remember talking to you and just saying, do you think this is a good idea? And here's the secret today. John was too. John was also one of the small handful of people I talked to, probably less than 10 people, who I said, hey, I'm thinking about making this move. And you, John, and all those other people could have said, nah, it's a terrible move. Stupid, man. Stay in radio. And I might have done it. You changed my life.
No. Well, I remember that call clear as day as well, and exactly where I was. And it was amazing that you called me. But yeah, you had your plan was all mapped out. You knew exactly where you were going. You had a couple of details to fill in, but you knew where you wanted to go. You knew to surround yourself with people that, you know, had done it before. My philosophy also, surround myself with people that are experts in what they're doing, and that's exactly where you were going. You had all the pieces, so it was a no-brainer.
I appreciate you saying that. I mean, definitely still figuring it out, as we all are at all times, but I can't thank you enough for saying that. So where are you actually born and raised? Like, where
born
was young Jen?
Rochester.
What school district?
Like,
what's
East part? High School.
East High,
that's
no
right.
kidding.
Yeah, no, and I wouldn't have done anything differently. Every couple of years, you know, there'd be a tough situation that would pop up there, but I really attribute it to some of the strengths and understanding of diversity and how important that is, and handling adversity.
Sure.
So
did you grow up in that neighborhood then, or like?
I did. Right? I grew over and moved back to it in the Cobbs Hill Park.
What did your parents do?
My father was the one audiologist at Kodak. And then my mom was a nurse.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, yeah. Wow. So both working hard, mm-hmm. it sounds like.
Yeah.
I mean, nurse job, holy crap, that's freaking demanding.
Yeah. And in the city, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So what was your child, what was your experience like? What kind of student were you?
I was a horrible student.
Really?
Terrible. Well, I mean, and no, No secret to anyone who has worked with or for me, but you know, I have ADD, and women were not diagnosed with ADD back in the Gen X generation because we present it differently. So it was very challenging for me to learn. But had strengths in other areas, I think probably because of that. Worked really hard, worked harder. That was the other thing too, is I had to work 30% harder than everybody else did to get the same grades.
John's phone was, we're sitting in John's office, his phone rang. Would it be hilarious if we answered it? No, I don't think we should. No, it's okay. But that might happen more though. They wouldn't diagnose ADHD.
Well, it presented differently. I'm older, I'm in my 50s. So it presented differently in girls, or it does present differently in girls than it does, boys were diagnosed much easier. They understood it more than,
some of the people who listen to this every week are going to be like, dude, we've heard you say this like five times already, but there is a Harvard study that came out that shows that entrepreneurs don't tend to be the best students. Mm-hmm. They tend to be students who are only good at the things they care about, but then when they don't care, they just basically barely pass.
Yep.
That was me too, by the way, is A's and C minuses. There were no B's. Mm-hmm. It was either I excelled or I did not care. Is that what your experience was like?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
What did you excel in? What were the couple subjects that had your attention?
History, for sure. Cool. I actually did great in history. So my getting fours and fives in my AP exams for history. Yeah. And athletics. So athletics were a strong suit for me.
What sports?
So individual sports, cross-country running, swimming, cross-country skiing.
Endurance, bro.
Yeah.
Damn.
But
what is the secret to running and not hating it?
No, I love it.
You love. Yeah, I know you
love it. No.
How do you get?
Because I think maybe it's because you can get in your own head, and it's you and you're outside, and that's when I do my best thinking.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. All my best thinking's done alone as well, to be honest with you. And then I bring those ideas to my mentors, and then they either crush me or they say,
Yeah. And I would say the cross country teams. I mean, I'm sure everybody says this about their sport, but cross country teams have some of the best people because you go through hell together, and it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
If I approach Jen, was it Newman at the time? What's your
Jaeger? Jaeger, as in Jägermeister, German, good German upbringing.
Oh, good. We're at a German restaurant
exactly.
right now. I don't know if you're going to get takeout. So if I walk up to a young Jen Jaeger on graduation day at East High and I say, Jen Jaeger, what are you going to be when you grow up?
I think I was going to be, I wanted to do some sort of law, civil rights type law. My degree ended up being in African American history. Mm-hmm. So I was all about the civil rights movement. And, cause I just had so much admiration for the strength that that the people going through that movement had. So, and coming from East, I had a background or had grown up in African American culture. Obviously, one of the few white kids that was at East, but I loved it.
What was the percentage, would you say, when you were 12?
It was about 10%.
10%? Wow. And so did you end up pursuing that? You go to college for that?
I didn't know what I was going to do in school. I ended up with a history degree because it's what I was great at. And then I just migrated towards Black studies and Black history. Ended up with a Black history degree.
Does all history fascinate you, or specifically African American history?
I would say American history fascinates me.
It's interesting too because it's so short, we're so young.
You
can learn it all,
right?
And what I love about our history is that when you start learning about our ancestors, it's like, hey, that wasn't that long ago.
No.
their great-great-grandchildren are around, it's kind of cool being a young country in that way. Other ways we're fucking
right,
up,
right.
But in some, it's a good way. Okay, so you leave college, what's the first job?
First job was Price Waterhouse. So I fell into this little rogue group at Price Waterhouse where we were implementing ERP packages at PW. It was 100% travel, out on Monday, back on Friday. Could live anywhere in the country, but they were 2-year projects in towns like Independence, Ohio, and Columbia, South Carolina, for South Carolina Electric and Gas, and ended up in New York City for that project. And that's when I left Pricewaterhouse, but was there for about 4 years. It was almost like a mini MBA because an ERP package, which is a software package that covers, you know, the entire company. It has everything. You know this from your business, but it's a package that does all the accounting, can do all the manages all the manufacturing. It was almost like a little MBA because each module of the software that we were implementing gave me a background in business functionality.
Were you good at it?
Yeah, I was. So for the first time, I really was because my brain functions functionally in software. And it helps. I can break down a software and then communicate it. Not very well right now, but I can communicate it to the user. So yeah, all the pieces fit together for the first time in my life.
I don't want to stop any, or I don't want to skip any steps here. But I think I know, everyone of course knows you as Young Lion, right? But you were the founder of a previous business, and wasn't it software?
Right.
Am I skipping too far ahead here?
That's where I fell. And I met my now ex-husband, he was also at Pricewaterhouse, and we started our first software company together. The tech bubble hadn't burst. It was a software security product that the functionality hadn't been created before. It was security for a software called SQL Server, which was the Microsoft database early on. This is the late 90s. And it sold within 6 months. We created it and sold it because just, you know, small companies were getting gobbled up.
The problem that you were solving, you know, when you developed that, you and your husband was your co-founder, right? You guys looked at each other and said, man, if we create this to solve this problem.
Full disclosure, it was completely him.
Okay.
Because
all right.
Coming from, you know, a Kodak background where you go to work, you know, I was conditioned, you go to work for one company, you know, as my father did, and you go do that for 25 years when... Aaron Newman, started CloudChecker here in Rochester. You know, he came home and said, he goes, yeah, I'm going to start this company. And I said, what, are you crazy? You know, at the time I had left Pricewaterhouse and was working for Scholastic, and we just bought our first apartment in Manhattan and had all kinds of bills and things like that. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to start this company. And I was like, no. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to do it. So he started creating it. And then I came home one day and he goes, I want you to quit your job too. It's like, what? Are you crazy? No.
Yeah,
and he's like,
yeah.
But he's like, but you have this background in training and customer service and, you know, all of that because of some of the work that I'd been doing at PW. And so I did. And he was spot on. He created this software. And within 4 days, the NSA, Swiss Re Bank, I mean, huge customers purchased our software because no one else had been doing it. And it was the first software that would, you know, challenge passwords and make sure that a database was actually secure. No one knew anything about software security at the time. So.
What a big deal that is.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
No.
So
he's smart.
Immediately they descend upon you and then you get acquired very fast.
Mm-hmm. Very fast.
Yeah.
Like I said, within 4 days we had an LOI on the table.
Dude. All right. So just real quick about that. It was called CloudChecker?
No, that one was called DB Secure.
DB Secure. Okay, so just real quick to go through this, because this is a whirlwind. This is a meteoric rise. I mean, you guys, I know you're saying he, but my lawyer has reminded me several times, whether I like it or not, my wife owns half my business. Because she was there from day one.
Yes.
So whether you like it or not, you own half that. Anyway, so it creates this thing. It's so spot on that you're getting these phone calls, and immediately you guys are able to sell the business. Was it a life-changing acquisition?
It was, in that it gave us the foundation to do the next one. So we sold. There's always a piece of it. We had to move to Atlanta because that's the company that it was a publicly traded company called ISS that's now owned by IBM. We had to move to Atlanta. And I went to go work, actually, I didn't want to go work for ISS. I went to go work for Cox Communications down there, but he had to go work for ISS for 15 months. And then as soon as that contract ended, and that usually happens with an acquisition, usually they have the founder go in and work with them for a while for the transition. As soon as that ended, we moved back to Manhattan and opened up our second company.
Do you recall anything about that 6 months? I always think that's funny, those 6 months where the founder sticks around, because that's got to be and I listen to podcasts about entrepreneurship all the time. I've heard a million founders talk about how terribly that 6 months often goes.
It is.
Was it a terrible
6 months? Yeah, it's incredibly hard. In fact, if I was ever going to write a book, it would be about, because that we've done, I've done four of them now. is that that transition time is so challenging for so many founders on many levels. One, they don't know what to do themselves because their baby has just been sold to somebody else. Two, they're not in control anymore. Three, they have somebody telling them what to do, and sometimes that might be contrary to what they think is best for right. the company. So it can be really challenging. I have seen a couple of situations where a founder continues on, but it's really rare, and it's more of an emotional piece. And they've also gotten all, you know, this big payout.
Yeah.
And so that is also an emotional.
Yeah. So they're not dependent on the job anymore.
Absolutely.
Either. They're damn.
Right.
So you go back to New York after these 6 months, and you do it again.
We'll do it again.
Yeah.
Company. So I had the background in operations, coming from Price Waterhouse, and I knew I started getting some legal background and was now getting a little bit of HR background. So I could actually very quietly behind the scenes handle the operational pieces of it, and Aaron could go and handle the creating the product, working on the funding and that type of work as well. So application security was the next one. That one grew to about 150 people. I was with it until about 75. At that time, we had two small kids, and so I stayed home for a couple of years to take care of them after it got to be about 75, but it grew to about 150. And that one, we, of course, you know, coming off of DB Secure, after 6 months, we're like, oh, this is a piece of cake.
Yeah.
We could totally do this again. You know, it took 6 months. That one took 12 years.
Okay.
So another lesson, you never know. And the market was completely different, right? So we had the tech bubble hadn't burst yet for DB Secure. The tech bubble had burst for application security. Funding was harder to get. The market was getting more and more saturated. So, you know, those outside variables really have a huge impact on whatever it is you're doing.
In plain, remember, you're not talking to a smart person here. On the second one, what is the actual business? Like, what is the problem that you're solving on the second
that
one?
That was a suite of security software. It's all different types.
Okay. And but there was no conflict of interest, or what do you call it? From the previous?
So, yeah, you had to wait. No, you had to get...
There was a waiting time?
You did have to jump through hoops.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, got it. Absolutely. Got it. But so you do it again, and 12 years and 150... I mean, you guys built this thing to something pretty big. So after you leave, after 75 people, he's running it. You guys are still married. You're at home.
Yeah. I mean, he left as well. So 2006, we're in Manhattan, and 9/11 had happened, and all of that. And we said, and we had two small children at the time, and said, you know, where's a great place? He turned to me. He goes, I want to start a third company. I want to take let the board run application security, and take some of the funds and go somewhere and start a third company. And where's a great place where we can move to raise the kids and a great labor force? And I said, take me home to Rochester.
Aww.
I said, this is where I want to go. And, you know, and he completely agreed. And
Where's he from?
He's originally from Binghamton.
Okay, cool.
Area.
Oh, so you said, take me on the Rochester. Yeah, that's so great.
Thank goodness. And it worked out perfectly. Yes. It was an amazing place to raise our children. Yeah. And it was a great labor force. And I mean, no better place to start a business than Rochester.
Yeah. So that second business eventually sells as well.
It eventually did. Okay, yes. But cool. and that was the end of the 12 years. But when we came back, you know, it's 2006, social media was new, and he goes, yeah, no, social media monitoring is the way to go. And once again I go, you're crazy. I don't want to do it. That's not going anywhere. Like, he's like, no, it's going to be big. I'm like, it's elderly people talking about their cats online. I'm like, it's never going to amount to anything. He's like, no, trust me. He's like, there's going to be companies that want to know what their campaigns are doing on social media, and built an incredible software company called Techrigy that was one of the very first social media monitoring platforms. And immediately, right out of the gate, couldn't get any local companies to buy it because they didn't understand social media either. But you know, we had national. I did cold calls, and more than 75% of the cold calls I made said, "Oh wait, we need that to the big companies."
Man.
So it took off as well. And we sold that within 3 years.
What was your guys' secret to being so visionary, being so ahead? You know, I know you keep giving him a lot of credit,
yeah.
And I wasn't there, but I gotta believe you're giving him. He deserves, of course, he deserves a ton of credit, but you're not giving yourself enough. But what was it that you guys just kept seeing that you were a step ahead over and over and over?
Well, there were a couple. I can't remember what they were right now, but there were a couple misdirections. So not being afraid to fail. You know, that sounds cliche. Now you see it so much, but absolutely true. You know, don't be afraid to go down one path, and if it's not the right path,
pivot.
Don't hold on to it. Pivot and go in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, the other one is doing your research. I mean, really figuring out where are things going and what is that next thing going to be? Looking ahead and not looking at what's successful now, but looking ahead to see what's going to happen.
And is it not finding problems to solve? I mean, you're looking ahead.
Correct.
At what problem,
yep,
is going to need to,
exactly,
be solved. It's real quick, it's kind of off the business, but you lived in New York City for, mm-hmm, so long. You grew up in Rochester. You've been in Rochester, mm-hmm, again, but you had this big period of your life in New York. What was that experience like? Not professionally, just personally,
yeah,
living,
wonderful,
in a concrete jungle.
Yeah.
Your kids were little in New,
mm-hmm,
York, right? Like, well,
yeah,
what do you miss about it, no, and what did you hate about,
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. So missed the food, missed the exposure to being able to do whatever I wanted to do whenever I wanted to do it. Missed, you know, some of the, I mean, we have a wonderful, incredible, we're so lucky to have the pieces of culture that we have here. But obviously in New York, it's at a much deeper and larger level than it is, yeah, here. So I'm not at all putting New York, Rochester does an incredible job. So yeah, so the food, incredible, the culture, incredible. And, you know, going around every corner, there's a new
yeah,
surprise and something that you haven't seen before. So it still feels like home to me.
Was
when I go back,
anything about it that while you were there,
yeah,
that you hated, that you were like, ugh.
So having children there is tough.
Yeah,
yeah, you
yeah,
really have to have. You can't, you know, if you live in a building, you can't leave, you know, your infant upstairs while you go downstairs to do laundry. So yeah, mm-hmm, things like that. Or you know, I when we bought came home to Rochester, bought a house. I got in my car. I went to Target. I got everything that I needed. I pulled into my own garage.
Yeah.
I put my own clothes in my own laundry. Like, those were just decadent, amazing things, as well as having,
yeah,
a lawn. Like, even just a tiny patch of grass in Manhattan is,
yeah,
just, you know, decadent. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so the third business, the social media,
yeah,
thing, that eventually gets acquired as well,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yep, yep,
that,
yep,
gets acquired as well. At some point in here, you guys,
yeah,
split,
yep,
right?
Yeah.
And now you're on your own. And so let's catch up to, because it sounds like we're getting close to Young Lion,
yeah,
time here. What's the light bulb, or am I missing a piece?
No, that's about it. Yeah, no.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, no.
What is the light bulb moment for Young Lion then? Because now you're on,
yeah,
your own, right? Now there's no more Aaron. It's
and,
just you.
Right. And so, yeah, there I am. And I think we've all had these moments in our lives where we're like, what the heck am I going to do now? I, you know, suddenly I'm divorced. I have two kids. The only thing that I know how to do, and I wasn't the face of the company, he was, the only thing I know how to do over the last 20 years is to start up companies. And I know how to do that really well. I know the legal piece of it. I know the, you know, I understand the HR piece of it. I've been handling the books. I understand the marketing side of it. So, what am I going to do? I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do something that I actually love. Cause I liked software, but I didn't love it. I'm like, I want to start a brewery. I grew up with beer. I'm from Rochester, with Genesee being such a huge influence here. And I was like, that is what I want to do. And it zero logic put in behind it, other than it was a moment and there was just a little fire that was there. So I started creating, you know, I was lucky that I had resources to be able to take my time with the transition and figure out, you know, exactly how to do it. So I put together my business plan. I was all set, and then knew that I couldn't do it on my own. I knew nothing about it. I tried to make beer. It was the most disgusting thing you've ever had in your entire life. And so I knew I needed somebody, and I happened to fall in with my co-owners that also wanted it. Totally serendipitous. A set of co-owners. One had a location on the shore of Canandaigua Lake, and one had a background in hospitality and understood how to navigate that world. And they said, "Come do." I had my presentation ready to go. It was almost just all the pieces fell into place, and we started Young Lion together.
Well, we might end up talking about the beer industry a little, mm-hmm, bit as a whole. I'll stay on your story, but just to understand this, the beer industry has kind of been a big,
mm-hmm,
there's been a big curve,
yes,
in the last decade plus, right?
Yep.
It beer has never gone away. It's been a huge deal, but it had this just boom.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we at on that boom when you are founding Young Lion?
Oh, when I'm founding Young Lion, it's been going up. And
okay,
it's probably at its most pretentious part of the curve, in that,
mm-hmm,
and maybe not the top financially. It wasn't at the top financially, but it was getting up there. So I have never experienced or heard of an industry that grew the way that craft beer grew. A brewery was opening at one point in the U.S. every 10.7 hours. In the 90s, we had about 180 breweries. Now we have over 10,000 breweries. Like just a huge explosion. And up until about, I would say, going into COVID, the demand was still huge for it. There were lines. The other half, the good friends and the ones that purchased the brewery, they had 2 hour long lines waiting for a fresh release. I can't think of another, you know, CPG product that has lines that are like that.
No.
So
my father-in-law and brother-in-law used to drive to like Vermont or something on a Saturday morning. They leave at 3 o'clock in the morning. So when you are in the pitch phase of Young Lion, are you early, on time, late? What would you say?
I am a tiny bit late.
Okay.
I say Three Heads did it perfectly, and those guys, so smart. They were right on the money with their timing, and focusing on sales. And we can get into them if you want. They're just beautiful model.
A quick question, your opinion. I mean, we're both fans, right? Of Three Heads, of course. Yeah. Being on time has contributed quite a bit to their success.
Huge.
Has it not? Because they were like, oh, craft beer? Yeah, that's a thing in Rochester. Mm-hmm. And what's the craft beer in Rochester? Mm-hmm. It's Three Heads.
Right, Three Heads. Or Roarbox.
Where I'm sitting. Hold on a second. I'm going to get kicked out of this.
And that's huge.
New Gen, though. Three Heads was... Because Roarbox was sort of...
Three Heads was on the leading of the New Gen.
We're not all that far apart in age, but to me...
So much older than you.
That far apart in age, but I do think Roarbox had the respect of being the OG. Mm-hmm. They were the OG. You know, there's Jenny, who's like the true OG. Then there's Roarbox, which is like the OG of craft. Mm-hmm. And then Three Heads was like the next generation. A craft.
Well, and it was intimidating. Starting up Young Lion, I would go into bars and there would be people with Three Heads tattoos. You know, it's like, okay, here I go into this, you know, and I'm, you know. Being one of the few women, you know, having brands like Three Heads and Roarbox around me, you know, it was an intimidating world.
Can I just tell you something real quick?
Yeah.
I thought I'm going to get in trouble for this one. My brother-in-law has an Omegang tattoo.
Yeah.
And I haven't ganged up the courage yet to ask him if he regrets it yet.
there's a Young Lion tattoo out there in the world too.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was a great moment.
Okay.
Shout out to him.
All right, I was gonna make an inappropriate joke, but then I realized I probably shouldn't.
It's inappropriate as you want.
It's not the best
craft beer, man.
It's not the best. It's not great to explain that I was going to make a joke, and trust me, it was funny. When you said there's a Young Lion tattoo, the first joke that went through my head. Remember, I have a Brother Wheeze background. Yeah. I was gonna go. I didn't know you've seen my naked ass, Jen. Nobody knows about that tattoo. But I guess you do. Anyway, sorry.
Funny.
It's not all that funny. It's not funny when
it
you have to.
It's funny.
All right. Anyway. Okay. So your pitch phase. Young Lion. It's going to come to life. It sounds like you had a couple partners who come together.
Yep.
Who were you talking about? Who are these people?
Robin Morgan. Married to Bob Morgan, and then Alicia Wolk, married to Tyler Wolk.
Got it.
So so two other women as well.
This is the Handmaid's Tale. Yeah. You don't have to sign husbands.
Bob. So originally, you are correct, but that's how we were introduced.
I got you.
We ended up getting introduced. So
By the way, something else I was embarrassed to ask you, but now I really want to ask you is, remember I told you that my lawyer said that doesn't matter what's in paper.
Yeah.
My wife owns half my business.
Yeah.
When you got divorced, did your lawyer agree with that? You did pretty good.
Took a little. Yeah. Anyway. So,
you did all right.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
So, yeah.
All right. All right. All right. Anyway. So Young Lion. So tell that story now. Let's get the doors open to Young Lion.
So first of all, my co-owners incredibly gracious and helped with the startup, and then said, Jen, you got this. And so the successes and failures, the mistakes I made, you know, totally on me. But
what do you remember?
What
do you remember mistake-wise?
Mistake-wise.
You told me a good one, I remember, actually.
Oh, there's so many mistakes. I was told to go as big as I possibly could because the capital investment is so is so, you know, hard. So once you build your brewery, really tough to get that financing to go any bigger. And because of the boom, we went really, really big. And if I was to go back, I probably would have gone smaller, but I didn't know that the boom was going to start to sure. go down in craft beer. Seasonality is another thing. I would have done probably a little bit more research on the area.
Oh, I remember this.
So yeah, Canandaigua, yeah. Very seasonal. We opened in July, was our first month opening. And of course we killed it. Like it was just, the tap room was slammed and, you know, five people deep. And it was just, and I was like, this is gonna be great. And then October came, right, and just crickets, you know. Yeah. So should have done probably a little more research on the location.
I remember having you up to the radio a second time. And I remember you talking about seasonality. And I could see it in you that you were just shell-shocked a little.
Yeah.
Well, my wife has Redbird, you know, in Fairport now, my wife's mother-in-law, and they experience seasonality, and the first year lessons there about cash flow and how to survive the slowness was like business masterclass in business. Like you're going to just learn, you're going to get it beaten into you. Here's, you need to manage your cash flow better than that.
You need to look at it annually. You can't look at it monthly.
Didn't you also tell me that, didn't you guys like your bottling line go backwards or something the first time you turned
it? First time they turned it on, the cans went in the wrong direction.
I can relate to that kind of stuff, by the way. Well, what did you get right though? Because you got a lot right. So give yourself
some credit. I hired people that were smarter than me. Back to the first interview we had with you, Phil Platts, did a national search for him. Don't scrimp on the people that you're hiring. If you're coming right out of the gate, he had an incredible pedigree and had worked on big systems as well. So, I mean, amazing. He, a perfect blend of both the artisan side of it, creative, but then also knew how to handle a big system, because we had a 35 barrel system, which is one of the largest craft brewing systems you can have. So
you started with some seed money and you were able to hire experts right off the bat. A lot of folks maybe listening to this started or are planning to start, and oftentimes we, and I was in this position, had no money to start. And so I think also a really good way to get some expertise, if you can't afford it yet, is mentors. People want to help. People who have done what you're trying to do and have done it well, being ahead of you. I know that it's going to come up a little bit later, but John Erlob, Rohrbach.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is before I think I even fell in with my co-owners. I was lucky enough to be introduced to John, and he sat with me at least for 3 hours. And I know, especially at that time, you would get a call or two a week of somebody that wanted to start a brewery and it was their dream. And so I know he must have had tons of calls like that, but he sat with me and mentored me, and then continued to check in on me to see how I was doing. Now, that is craft beer culture. Not all industries are like that. Certainly software was never like that. He's a huge, huge mentor to me from the very beginning.
What would you say if I ask you for one, like what's one nugget that was a John nugget that you carried with you on and on?
Watch your P&L. Keep an eye on your P&L. And that's what he, you know, John has the perfect balance of business acumen and being able to be kind. And, you know, so many of us, when we get stressed out, we present being nervous, or we can be angry, or, you know, but never John, you know. And then maybe he's not stressed out. Maybe I'm just assuming that like the rest of us he is, but incredibly kind and you know, a lot to learn from him.
The P&L is easy to ignore because it can be intimidating, can be scary. Sometimes it doesn't look too pretty. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's very easy to just say like, you know, I'll just ignore it today. I'll give myself the day off and ignore my numbers. And it's you can't do it. Well, can't do it.
And the other challenge is that, you know, when you're starting a business, so many things are logically make sense. I mean, there are so many things that you think, oh, well, that's a no brainer. I should buy that I should do that. But you really need to edit it down and keep an eye on what you truly can, not what makes sense to spend, but what you truly can afford to spend.
And you can't let it get out of control. And mm-hmm. I'm in a position now where I'm like, hold on a second. Mm-hmm. I saw some emails flying around this week mm-hmm. about buying a scale that goes down to like mm-hmm. the third decimal of grams. Mm-hmm. And they start flying. It's just mm-hmm. my people going back and forth. And they're starting to throw out like $3,000 scale. Mm-hmm. Oh, so this scale is only $3,000. And I just replied back and I had a link to like an Amazon gram scale. And I was like, this is $110.
Exactly.
Get this one. We don't need that. Because it starts to go the other way and you start to get fat and happy. And I try to guard against that as much as I can. Like, we can't always just go get the piece of machinery that fixes it. Think through this and make strategic. But
investing where it's important as mm-hmm. well. I would say, mm-hmm. We had a centrifuge and we were one of the few that did. And that thing paid for itself. I mean, it was $140,000 piece of equipment, but it more than paid for itself over the years.
Bottling line investments.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
Us.
Right.
Huge. Yeah, no. Totally. Yeah. Okay. So you get the doors open and you're gangbusters in July. October comes around mm-hmm. and you're slow. Yeah. You have to figure out now, am I going to get my beer into mm-hmm. stores? And also you're in this weird situation where you have a gazillion competitors, a new one every day. Mm-hmm. It got to the point where you couldn't even keep track of what the newest brewery was. I mean, breweries were having a grand opening every weekend in the city.
Right, especially in Rochester. More breweries per capita. Actually, in Canandaigua, more breweries per capita than almost anywhere in the country.
Incredible.
11,000 people, and I think we had 15 breweries or something like that. That's not quite right, but
So give me your sort of argument back mm-hmm. and forth between rising tide floats all boats versus, oh my God, I have too many competitors.
Yeah.
Where are you at?
It's all in the customer base. Like right now, as you see the customer base deplete, it's saturated. It wasn't yet saturated then, and rising tides raise all boats. People were coming to see all of us at once. They were on a beer tour, or they wanted to check them all out, or there's a passport program where you can go check off and see. So it has to do with the customer base. That doesn't mean so the brewers are going to go through a tough time, and they need to pivot. It's not going anywhere, but it's going to have to adjust to being a normal business now, a normal mm-hmm. CPG business.
What did you see, whatever the opposite of a light bulb moment is? Mm. I kind of want to ask the same question twice in a row, once in regard specifically to Young Lion, and then once in regard specifically to just the beer industry in general. Mm. They probably coincide quite a bit, but where is the... Is there a word for the opposite of the light bulb moment, by the way?
I think there's a moment where I think you need to make a choice. Yeah, I don't know if it's a light bulb moment. It's, you see a fork in the road and you have to decide which way you want to go.
You remember this moment? What led to this?
I do. So keep in mind, Young Lion is different. Young Lion is one of the four or five. It would probably be Roarbox, Three Heads, Big Ditch you would put in that group. A larger brewery that we also didn't have food, the way that Roarbox does for its restaurant. So it's got an incredible base. But really... needs distribution at the end of the day. Not all breweries need distribution. And we definitely needed distribution, and we had the challenge of having seasonality as well.
What was your secret?
More than the other ones. So
I want to go back one step, actually, because I forgot to ask you. What was your secret to being so well distributed? You were in every supermarket. I would go to the freaking PGA. There was Young Lion. Like, you were so good at being everywhere. Was that just hustle, or was there a secret?
It was definitely 90-hour weeks. Yeah, it was beating the drum and just not, you do it. Yeah. And I see you're everywhere. And
I'm getting better.
And no one does relationships like you do. And I think you would say exactly the same thing. It's all about relationships and it's all about being a good partner. When Wegmans needs something from us, but by being a good partner, incredibly kind to us, and supportive, that's everything. You can't go in and start making demands. You need to put yourself in. I think probably I got a little bit of that from, learning how to deal with people at East, mm-hmm. So like, mm-hmm. What do they need, and what can I do to help their world, and creating those relationships.
Customer service at some points are lost. I mean, just bending over backwards and doing everything you can to satisfy your client is just it is key, especially when you're talking about like a Wegmans or something. We've got them as well, and you have to because we can't buy ourselves our way out of problems the way the big national international brands can. We just have to rely on being excellent
and be nice to everyone, right? It's there were huge accounts that came out of, I was nice to somebody at a festival, you know, and sat and talked to somebody for 20 minutes and then found out later that they had 3 retail licenses and took me on.
On Getting Real with Bossy, we celebrate the courage, grit, and brilliance of business owners without pretending the journey is flawless.
These are bold, energizing, and unfiltered conversations about the wins, lessons, and the moments that shape us.
We are honest, uplifting, and full of the kind of connection every entrepreneur deserves.
If you're ready for real talk that fuels you, subscribe to Getting Real with Bossy.
Be bold.
Be brave.
Be the boss and subscribe.
If you're a fan of Rochester's local music scene, you follow The Sound on Instagram to keep up on who's playing where. The folks behind The Sound have joined Lunch It Or to bring you nights and weekends, featuring conversations with musicians, venue owners, fans, and changemakers to talk about the growth and evolution of music in Rochester. Stay connected to the scene. Check out Nights and Weekends wherever you get your podcasts.
So, I would say that's specifically for the Rochester market, because, you know, doing work like the other half did in New York City is different, because it's just, you know, the concentration of people creates a different market in the way you handle it. But for Rochester, and we're so open to that. I mean, it's just the way that this community works. You know, it's relationships and
go everywhere, kind. Talk to everybody. Mm-hmm. Last year I went to the New York Kitchen Garden Party, which, by the way, breaking news, they asked me to MC it this year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm excited.
That means I got to go.
I can't wait. We're getting a date down. It's exciting.
All right.
But I went to the New York Kitchen Garden Party last year, and I do have to be careful because there's confidentiality in place. But I'm with a guy, and this guy is, he introduced me to this woman he's with. And the woman starts talking about, like, so you do glass bottles? You can put juice in glass bottles? You know what I'm talking about? You can do juice in glass bottles? And I'm going, Yeah, I can do juice in glass bottles. And I don't know who I'm talking to. I really didn't quite understand who I was talking to. And it ended up being a giant amount of volume of juice. And you know, the rest of this, I can't go too deep into that story. Yep. But this was just somebody who just like, hey, meet so-and-so at a thing. And look what could come of it. It's incredible.
You just never know.
And you
keep saying, okay, well, I'm going to keep saying yes. And then nothing happens. Yeah. And you go, oh my gosh, is this even worth it? Should I be doing something different? But then all of a sudden, and keep trying, you know, reached out to Walmart and said, you know, and it was a new buyer for Walmart, happened to be a woman, and said, thank you for supporting, you know, the women that you do at Walmart. And suddenly I'm in, you know, Walmart's all over, you know, where everybody else was getting cut at that time.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that that's what happened, because everybody else got cut and I got put on the shelves, you know? So, it's just keep trying and be kind.
And you hit on something else that we got to talk about, because it doesn't get talked about enough, because you hear your story and it's a story of success. And unfortunately, I think maybe that happens with me too. People just see the wins. Mm-hmm. They don't see the million no's, a zillion. I have this sales funnel spreadsheet that I have sitting on my desktop every morning, and there are more names on that funnel of people who I cannot get a hold of, or it's gone cold, or they're not interested, than there are wins that you've heard about. And people don't realize you just get a lot of no's. You got to be able to persevere. Yeah. Resilience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And you got to do the work. There's no 9-hour days. Like you need to.
I'm getting down to, I would say I'm probably at a 50 to 60 hour week right now.
I don't even want to talk to you.
I've been doing these talks lately, and now I'm repeating myself again, but I talk a couple times a semester at various colleges and young people, and, you know, work-life balance. And I have this thing I've been working into my speeches recently where I, because of Taylor Swift and how she made the era thing. And I keep saying, I think you can get to work-life balance in life. I think you can, but you have to have an era where you just completely go balls to the wall.
So you should promise me you'll ask John about that when he comes in.
Okay.
Because John seems to have that down. And yeah. I've always wondered, I'm like, how is, but I was, you know, my brewery was much younger than John's. And so, and he's been doing, you know, he's really the master.
Yeah.
He's the goat. So, but yeah, but promise me you'll ask him that because I want to know that answer.
I will. So what happens next? So Young Lion, so let's talk about, so it's okay. It's time to part ways with the Young Lion.
I can, yeah. So, well, I can see it coming. The numbers are going down. The sparkle on beer is starting to fade. People are drinking less. Gen Z is drinking less. And then also the Ozempic thing is coming through. So people are drinking even less than that. And I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen with this culture change. And because we were dependent on distro. So it, once again, what breweries were doing at that point in time is leaning into their tap room because the margin is so much better over the bar. It was the smart place to go. They were smaller. We were out of 10,000. I think we were the 535th largest in the country. So we were decent size and in that higher percentage of size breweries and bigger bills to go along with that. So I was just really lucky. It would been close and been working with the other half for a while. And they were looking for another space, and so I was just really lucky that they had been interested in the facility. And at the time, you know, K2, you know, we had had a great relationship with them, and said, you know what, you know, and they were opening a new brewery, and we would sell the brand to them at the time.
So you sold basically intellectual property to K2.
Correct.
And assets to other half, right?
Correct.
Other half.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, those deals are so interesting to me because I always wonder, like, who calls who? How do you, let's just talk about other half real quick.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Who calls who?
It was a little bit of both. I'd been, you know what? It's a relationship. So, like I said, we had been working with them on NDA, you know, some stuff going on for a while, and had a great relationship with them.
So
and,
you had regular contact.
Yeah. And, yeah. And so, for me to pick up the phone, and once again, it's the craft beer industry. So, everybody, huge opportunities to make incredible friends in this industry. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like it. It was one of the most supportive experiences I've ever had. So everyone is lovely, and everyone can pick up the phone and call anybody and say, I need something, and they will absolutely come and help. So yeah, I had that relationship with other half and just picked up and said, well, you know, what are you thinking? And they said, what are you thinking? And so that just kind of manifested that way. And then and it happened very quickly. So
how quick? 2 weeks, 2 months?
It a lot faster than any of the software companies. I'll just say that.
Yeah, a couple of months,
really,
probably, or
something like that.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah,
and you're married again, right?
Yeah,
he's a lawyer.
He is,
and so that helped. Legal fees were kept low.
Well, anyway,
nice. That's pretty good. Okay, so all right, let's talk about the day after you've sold. So the deal with K2 is done. Deal with other half is done.
Yeah.
And now you're just Jen again. What was that like? Did that suck? Was that cool?
It was great to take a break. Yeah. It heartbreaking because the people that I was working with, and just incredible, incredible, miss them, you know. I still miss them now. Mm-hmm. We get together. We try to get together. So that was really hard. Missed the town. Missed the community. You know, it was my, you know, the kids used to say, Mom loves the brewery more than she loves us. You know, it likes to be the, so, but, and that's not true. But I did love it, you know, so it's hard. It becomes a part of you. I'd live 8 years.
You got another startup in you at some point?
So I actually am working for another company right now, a little bit. So, but no, I don't know if it's not breaking.
No, I know you're employed.
But yeah. So, and then, well, yeah, so I'm going to help John for whatever he needs help with. And then, but yeah, so I'm working for a great company called Durst right now. So yeah.
I've toured that building, by the
you
way.
You have.
That's a really cool building.
Yeah. So they make the machines that actually made all of the Young Lion labels.
Oh, cool.
So yeah. So TLF Graphics, they made all the machines. So that was kind of a full circle moment.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's really cool. Well, I can't even tell you how freaking perfect John Urlaub is, because he literally walked into this room
he's pretty perfect.
I'm not even making this up, John. It's literally the natural moment, like, where it would be the right thing
Paulie's
to do.
Like, I'm really tired of talking to Jen.
No, please. I could do this forever. Oh, yeah. Bring a chair on over. That's right. So here's what I want to ask real quick, if I could. We've left one big piece of the story out, and that is the most recent news. It's what we started the podcast with. Well, I was going to hand you this one. And my question is, because I only have two mics, because, you know, I haven't upgraded my equipment in a while. I've had other things to buy. I want to hand you the mic, John. I was wondering if the two of you can talk about how your deal went down, because now Rohrbach, I don't know, do you own the...
All right. I will tell you the story. I hope your little time together was great. This has been really exciting. In all honesty, I have to tell you that my gut prior to doing this little deal was that to buy a brand that isn't your own, that you didn't grow, or that the people that, you know, the story behind it and the person, the energy behind it is gone, is just going to eventually fade. You could say, well, it has this much shelf space, we have this many taps. If you're not passionate about it in our business, it goes away. This situation, I thought, was very different. I think the reputation of Young Lion, because of, honestly, Jen and her team and what they put together, the quality that's there, they have a very dedicated following. There's a distributor in town that she has built a great relationship with. They wanted the brand to continue. Big retailers like our favorite Wegmans was very committed to continuing to do. So I see this not as something that short term gives us a little bit of volume until it eventually fades. I think this is going to grow. And it was not a simple process, but Jen did help a lot along the way to make it all happen. And I wasn't sure it was going to, because I don't know if you talked about this at all, but if you're out of product for a while, all of those taps and shelf space you have all goes away. And we made it happen just in time. It was a little late, but just in time.
Damn. All right, so Jen, so what's happening? You're seeing everything depletes. The brewery, the other brewery has whatever they have go down. Yeah. And all of a sudden production has halted. And you're like, oh, crap. So who calls who? Same question as I asked last time.
Well, I mean, John and I never stop talking, really. John and I get together on a regular basis. So it really wasn't a somebody call somebody. It was, hey, this is what's going on in my world. Even after I sold the brewery, we were still getting together. When K2 hit the bumps that they did, I can't even tell you how flattering it was that John was interested in the brand, because he is, you know, he is craft beer of Rochester. So, I mean, that's huge. That's a big point for me. So, and so he's like, yeah, can we figure out if we can make this work? And, we just started working at it. You know, we wanted to be, respectful, and then when the moment reached where, you know, K2, when they were done with it, then we were lucky that John, could take it over.
We had some bumps in the road.
We did.
It wasn't a simple thing, because of your K2 situation, and they had to work a bunch of things out, and it was owned, you know, there was collateral on it and stuff, but we kept saying this, you know, we should give up, because it just wasn't going to work, and we just never gave up. So we're really happy.
Six months.
It's months.
Right.
And you know, there was the real concern was whether product would run out. And I think finally Wegmans came back to the distributor and basically said, if you can't commit to getting some product, we have to take you out of the sets. And that would have been it. And we kept telling the people we were negotiating with that the value would completely go away. So take what you can. Let's make this happen. It's got to happen now.
Right.
So fortunately, we had the right people in the right room, and we pulled it off. Yeah. We're excited about it.
Awesome. Well, all right. Well, thank you so much, Jen. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you doing this episode. We're gonna do John next week, and next week for us means in about a minute. I'm just gonna hit but we'll do John on the John's story on the podcast next week. But this was your week, and I'm so appreciative of you, and you know, you've just been such a good friend and so encouraging over the years as well. So the way you talk about him is, to me, you're one of those people to me. So thank you so much.
Anything for you, Paul. And thank you for all the support that you gave me over the last 8 years.
Same.
From day one, Paulie was my first interview.
But you almost got out of my very last question, though.
Oh, what's that?
You've had four successful startups in your life. Do you have a fifth in you one day?
No.
No? You're done?
No, I am. I am. I am going to help John where John needs help.
Okay.
I am going to, you know, enjoy my family and see if I can come hang out with you, Paulie.
Jesus. You know what? I'm so dumb that just until this exact moment, I realized the freaking force the two of you are. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just, oh my God. The amount of excellence the two of you.
Jen, let's consider this a startup, all right? We're going to go for it.
All right. Thank you so much, Jen. John, I'll see you next week.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.